Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh, Sue and I were just talking about our future careers when radio no longer exists, and I might have to round out those last couple of years with being a greeter at Walmart. And then I asked her, I said, can you imagine me being a greeter at Walmart?
And I can, but it's not pretty.
No, it would not be good.
No.
Hey, this is good. I just retweeted this guy. I don't even know who he is, but this is pretty funny. He asked a question on the X, formerly Twitter, to the purple-haired college students. Is it death to America or is it America, please pay off my student loans, because I feel like it can't be both. I thought that was a great point.
Did you see the meme from yesterday about that? There was one, something along those lines,
and
was pretty funny.
Yeah, share that if you can find it.
All right.
So we have Brian Kilmeade coming up tomorrow. Also, Sue, I don't think this is terrible of me as the host. I did not promote this. We're going to try to correct that here. George Gray will be here in studio from The Price is Right.
Fantastic.
You might remember that George, who plays this little game that we like to call The Price is Wrong, was supposed to be in town for one of our Fish Fry broadcasts, and he had flight delays, et cetera. So he's back in town, and he'll be with us tomorrow. Also, Lieutenant Governor Mike Kehoe is just back from the Texas border. He'll join us in 24 hours at 5:07. We've got a roundtable on Friday. Jane, Jeff Rainford, Greg Keller, all on the panel. Should be a lively one.
Oh, yeah.
Should be a lively one for sure. George Rosenthal coming up a little later this hour. I want to talk about Australia trying to control the internet. And you mentioned a meme. I had an audio soundbite of the Australian Prime Minister trying to, you know, complain about a meme being created about him. That's what they're doing in Australia. But right now, Martin Koldoff is back with us. He's a former professor of medicine at Harvard University and Mass General Brigham. He is the founding fellow of the Academy for Science and Freedom. And we're going to talk a little COVID vindication here, which doesn't get really discussed in much of the legacy media. Martin, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm all right. Are you horrified by what you're seeing on the college campuses, though?
I think academia is in trouble, not just because of that, but because of censoring and silencing of different views, like on Twitter, for example. Or I was recently censored by TikTok for saying things about the vaccine. So I think
right.
That's a very disturbing thing, that we don't have freedom of speech.
Yeah. So when we went through all this, and a lot of us early on, and I would say certainly at the end of May, June, into July, when things were becoming a little bit more clear, and I think we always have to kind of admit the first couple of months were a little mysterious and we didn't know what was going on, but then it became pretty clear, but it was still only like one or two opinions, seemingly, Dr. Fauci and others, that were really providing most of the information. And some of us were always saying, wait, there are different perspectives in medicine at prestigious universities, or at least they once used to be considered prestigious, that have different opinions on this. What you wrote about recently is Sweden, because Sweden was discussed quite a bit at the beginning of all this, and it certainly looked like there is a vindication at this point, right?
Yeah, so in 2020, Sweden was heavily criticized both by politicians and the media for not locking down, for keeping schools open, and keeping restaurants open, and so on. And we now know what the result is, because if we look at excess mortality during the pandemic, Sweden has the lowest excess mortality in the Western world, in Western Europe, North America, and the Pacific. So it's very clear that Sweden took the right approach of focusing the protection on older people who were at risk of COVID mortality, while letting kids go to school and letting young adults live a fairly normal life.
So, Martin, what do we know specifically about some of the data in Sweden? Look, you're from Sweden originally, right?
I am, yes.
Okay, and this is your area of expertise. You're an epidemiologist and a biostatistician. So, with maybe kind of wrap up the criticism, because some people thought what Sweden was doing was just nuts at the time.
Well, so one principle of public health is you can't just focus on one disease, COVID. You have to look at health overall, and also, of course, education and so on. So by locking down, you do something trying to suppress COVID, which you can only do temporarily. As soon as it will come eventually, no matter what. So, but then you have all these collateral public health damages on cancer treatments or cancer screening or taking care of cardiovascular disease. People were staying home when they should have gone to the hospitals when they have chest pain, for example, or diabetes or mental health that deteriorated because of these lockdowns. So if you're in public health, the principle is you have to look at public health overall, and you can't just focus on one particular disease. That's disastrous, and that's exactly what happened in the U.S. and U.K. and most other countries, while Sweden took a more broad approach and saying, well, we can't just lock down because that's going to create bad collateral damage on other things.
You know what's interesting about you saying that? You know, I started to think, and I unfortunately or fortunately, you can look at it a variety of different ways. I subscribe to a lot of different publications because I meet the paywalls. So I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, the New York Times, you know, you name it, the Atlantic. I even subscribe to the Atlantic, even though I disagree with 98% of the content, because every once in a while I find something. But I bring it up because you just mentioned collateral public health consequences, which is a very important. I mean, you have collateral mental health for these kids, but you just listed a bunch of different things. And I was thinking to myself, Martin, the number of times I've seen coverage by the legacy media of those particular issues. In fact, I don't know if I've seen any coverage of that. You know, I could count it on my hands, which is kind of stunning when you think about it, because those are the types of things that we do know something about at this point. You'd think there'd be an effort to maybe straighten out the record on some of that.
I mean, we know that the test scores for kids went down because of these school closures, and that's not a surprise. So that's something that these kids are going to have to live with for a long time. And we know that mental health has deteriorated and so on. So those things are there, and they are being published in the scientific literature of this deteriorating public health. But when they are covered in the news, and often they're not, but when they are covered, they always say, well, this is what COVID is. But that's not true. It's what the lockdowns did. Was completely unavoidable.
Well, what's
it was
interesting,
a man-made disaster.
Yeah, you're, the dynamics that you had through all of this were quite fascinating, because you were viewed in one way in this country, and you know you were trying to present a different approach. But in Sweden, you were like a left-wing fanatic, right?
Yeah. So Sweden had a social democratic prime minister. So I guess in Sweden I was a left-wing fanatic, and in the U.S. I was a right-wing lunatic.
Well, when you got all bases covered, you got to be doing something right.
I guess so.
Yeah, but the point being, and this is what disturbs me, and you've written about this in books, that really public health is not supposed to be political, but it certainly has become that way.
Yeah, and that's very unfortunate, because as a public health scientist, I care about everybody. I don't care who you voted for. I care about all Americans, and as a public health scientist, you can't sort of mix up with the political message with the public health message, because then if you say I like this politician or I don't like these other ones, then they're not going to listen to me on public health. So I deliberately did not talk about my own political views, because what I can contribute is my knowledge about public health. So I think I have talked to media on from the left to the right. And in the middle, and I think that's the obligation of a public health scientist to try to reach as many people as possible.
And I agree with that. And look, when you wrote about some of these things, and you were involved, as you have made it clear in the Swedish debate. Your opinions are in Swedish newspapers, but there's also a group of scientists who opposed the no lockdown approach back in 2020. Have any of those, you cite in the piece that you wrote, 22 scientists who publicly opposed that, in you say that they wanted Sweden to copy China, the U.S., and the rest of the world in shutting society down. Have any of those 22 scientists written anything to say, oopsie, I might have been wrong about this?
No, they've gone quiet, I think. And
shocking.
So, but I'm actually very happy that they spoke up. I mean, I fiercely disagree with them, and I was arguing against them in op-eds in the major Swedish newspaper. But I'm actually glad that they spoke up, because they did a service by doing that. And that was because to have that discussion in Sweden, because it was obvious that other countries did it other ways. So it was very important for the Swedish public to have that discussion very openly. We're hearing both sides, and then they could say, okay, what Anders Tegnell, who is the state emergency, said, and what Martin Kulldorff said, that makes sense, and what these 22 said doesn't make much sense. So I'm very grateful that actually they spoke up, even though I fiercely disagree with what they said.
Martin, did you by any chance read the piece, I believe it was in the New York Times today, by Dr. Daniela Lamas? Did you see that piece about medicine?
No, I don't typically read New York Times.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Hey, good move on your part. But here, I think you would find this interesting, because this was a piece written by someone who I think was at Brigham, at the Women's Hospital in Boston. And her position, shockingly, in the New York Times is skepticism is healthy, but in medicine, it can be dangerous. And basically, it was a piece that addresses the issue of public confidence that we no longer have in the so-called experts in medicine. Which I think you would enjoy that column.
Skepticism is always good, important in science, I think.
Well, and I think that her point is skepticism is healthy, but what happened is in medicine, the woke world has kind of taken over, and unfortunately the decisions are not being made medically anymore, which I think may be part of your point on COVID as well. But Martin, thank you so much for writing about this and taking a stand, and by the way, being vindicated on your position on COVID from 4 years ago.
Great talking to you. And
take
thank
care.
You for
That's
me.
Martin Kulldorff, who is Swedish. So we have a little bit of a challenge. But I think I want to address this, because this was, I saw the headline on this story in the New York Times, and I'm always a little suspicious. And I don't know that she went as far as maybe I expected her to be. But the message is certainly well received by me, and I think others should think about this. And she tells a bit of a story here in the piece. She says, I arrived at the hospital on a recent morning to find a team of doctors gathered outside of a patient room. The patient was struggling. His breath's too fast and too shallow. For days, we had been trying to walk the line between treating the pain caused by his rapidly growing cancer and prolonging his life. Overnight, he had worsened. His family, wrestling with the inevitability of his death, had come to a tentative plan, and I needed to make sure that his wife understood what was ahead. I explained that if we inserted a breathing tube, as she had decided overnight, her husband would be sedated. When the rest of their family arrived in Boston, we would take out the tube, and he would die. We would not be able to wake him up. To do so would only cause him to suffer. Then his wife stiffened. Why wouldn't he be able to wake up? I explained that his cancer was so advanced that to wake him would be to give him the conscious awareness of drowning. I watched as she took me in, this doctor she had never met before, telling her something she didn't want to hear. Her expression shifted. Why should I believe you? She asked me. And then her voice toughening. I don't think that I do. Now, that's a fascinating response to something like that. And she says, the room was silent. My patient's wife looked into her bag, rooting around for a tissue. I glanced down at my feet. Why should she believe me? I was wearing sneakers with my scrub pants. I found myself wondering whether she would have trusted me without question if I appeared more professional or if I were an older male. Perhaps there was so much more at play in that moment. This was not just about one doctor and one family, but instead about a public for whom the medical system is no longer an institution to be trusted. And that's pretty much where I'll stop, because I don't need to read the most of the column, because she kind of goes back and forth on some of this, and I'm not so sure she's on my side. In fact, I am sure she's not on my side of most of these arguments. But it is an interesting point. And at one point, she addresses the issue of trust in her medical training. So, and she says, look, we didn't talk about trust during, you know, her early years as a doctor. It's not something in medical school they were taught. Well, maybe at this point they need to, because, as you know, I've gone on this rant against experts. And It's not that I don't believe in what doctors can provide, because obviously some of them are exceedingly good at what they do. And if you end up in a health emergency, if you have cancer, if you have a tumor, if you have any number of things that you might need help with, you want the best surgeon, you want the best person to look at your situation. But I also think that, you know, I've said this before, and I don't mean this as any disrespect to doctors. When they say practicing medicine, they often throw darts because it's mysterious. A lot of these diseases, conditions that people have, strange abnormalities, they don't exactly know what's going on, let alone how to cure them. So you take that in and of itself, and you combine that with the aftermath of the pandemic, when you had so many people that we were supposed to trust tell us things that just simply weren't true in the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's the vaccine will prevent you from getting COVID, or the vaccine will prevent you from giving COVID to somebody else, or, you know, you can get this from surfaces, or a mask is going to help you. All of these things, I mean, there's not a whole lot that most of us who raised a lot of questions in the early months of the pandemic were not vindicated on.
Mm.
Really, even, you know, one thing I was thinking about recently, and I should pull up this soundbite. Do you remember when Trump was mocked? He came out at one point, and this was in, I don't know when it was, but it was in the first year, and he was with Fauci and Dr. Birx, and he said something like, well, this thing is probably just going to go away.
Uh-huh.
He said something along those lines, and he was mocked. Now, I knew this is one of those dangerous things to do with Donald Trump, because every once in a while you have to kind of think where he's coming from. And in that particular instance, here's what I thought of. I thought about what happened in, was it 1918 or 1919 when we had the pandemic?
Because I don't remember.
What happened was, and there have been books that have been written about this, essentially after 2 years, coincidentally, wasn't that the timeline here? It went away. Now, of course, COVID is still out there, but it's not out there in any way, shape, or form at this point worse than the flu. So people were wrong in the early days of COVID to say, well, look, this thing is just like the flu, because it wasn't just like the flu. Now it is just like the flu. Now I was told this yesterday by someone who was checking into a medical situation. I can't remember which facility. Just yesterday, Sue, one of the first things they did was do a COVID test. Why?
I just can't believe that's still going on.
Well, it shouldn't be still going. If you're going to do a COVID test, why wouldn't you do a strep test, or why wouldn't you do a flu test? I guess the answer would be, well, you wouldn't have the different answer on the flu, because the flu does kill a lot of Americans. But I thought about that moment with Trump simply because he was mocked so much about it, and essentially now it has, for the most part, going away. I haven't seen any real scare tactics on COVID since last summer, when Taylor Swift was being accused in the LA Times of being a super spreader. And they've tried, maybe in December. Oh yeah, we did have the situation in December with the city. Remember the health department sent out the memo and they were trying to tell people to wear masks?
Yeah.
But that's the last time. We've gone 4 months without super lunacy on COVID, although these dumb protesters and a lot of other people still think their masks work outside.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, I just retweeted this. Our dear friend, my dear friend, Kenny Wallace, was on the Kiss Cam at Busch Stadium today. And what's awesome about
it,
Sue,
it's
awesome anyway, but Kenny takes his hat off when he realizes he's on the big screen. And he does, you know, kind of does his hair. He leans over and he kisses Kim. And it's just adorable.
Yes,
took his
it
glasses
is.
Off. So we love Kenny Wallace so much. And then this is just a moment that I had a few minutes ago in the building. We have a great father-son. That's not right. Husband-wife team that does the custodian work.
They're
here.
Fantastic.
Fletcher and William. And Fletcher says to me, "Hey, aren't you the guy with the T-shirts?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm one of the guys with the T-shirts." And I said, "What size are you?" He goes, "Large." And Wilma says, "You ain't no large." So I think she tried to, you know, he might need an extra large, but I'm going to try to find him a T-shirt. Hey, we are joined by George Rosenthal, one of the owners of ThrottleNet, fine sponsor here on 97.1 FM Talk. We had some tech issues that we thought we would talk to him about. In particular, there's a story about Elon Musk and Australia, and we can talk about TikTok. George, how are you this afternoon?
Very good, very good. Thanks so much for having me back on.
Do you have a way to, I saw this story about Elon Musk, and this is a little in the weeds, but I think it's interesting from a free speech and, you know, free internet content perspective. He doesn't like, Elon does not like an order from Australia to remove a video of a stabbing of a religious leader. And, you know, they want to shut down some of these videos. Elon believes in more information, but I guess this has gotten pretty nasty over there, right?
It really has. And honestly, this is the kind of thing where I'm normally on the Elon Musk side, and this one I'm kind of not.
Okay. I'm curious about that.
I'm really not. This is a video that a 16-year-old terrorist walked up to a bishop live streaming on April 15th and stabbed him multiple times. This video was then put out all over Meta, Google, you name it, YouTube, and X, of course. And the government of Australia said, "Look, this is an act of violence. You need to take this down." And I get where Elon's going is he's trying to say, "I want open free speech and I want the internet to be available for all walks of speech." But in this case, this isn't really speech. This is a full-on violent act. But he had a court order in Australia that forced him to take it down. So what he did was he geofenced Australia just for the video, and it's still up worldwide. So outside of Australia, you can still watch this video. And to me, that's kind of a little disturbing when I have, you know, I have kids and I don't want them seeing that kind of thing. And on top of that, I don't really think it's good to give these terrorists ongoing publicity so that they can go, you know, favor others to do the same thing.
That's true.
Could you not have, and I don't know how they deal with something. I think they have content advisories on something like that, right? Saying
yes,
that, you know,
yes,
before you press this, of course, that usually inspires people to say, "Yeah, I'm going to look at that."
You got it. That's right. That's the old, remember the language labels they used to put on albums back in the 80s, and everybody then wanted to listen to it. Google, though, thankfully, Google, Meta, they all complied with Australia and took it down. But this sparks a very interesting debate on, can a country control content? So that's something we're going to have to watch ongoing as time goes on, is it, can a country say, "All right, the rest of the world can't see this video, and you have to take it down." Mm. So that's definitely something that's going to be an interesting debate as things go along.
Okay.
I mean, here we are dealing with TikTok at the same time.
But the thing that concerns me about Australia, maybe I get your point, but I also get Elon's point. And the thing that concerns me about Australia is I've seen too many things come out of that particular country and, you know, continent to be a little concerned, especially during COVID with some of the things that happened with their lockdowns, et cetera. And then I had this audio from today, Anthony Albanese, who's the prime minister, who's been, you know, tussling with Elon. And he's upset today because there's some memes of him out there and he wants to shut that down. Check this out.
Media platforms have a responsibility to make sure that misinformation isn't got out there. I noticed today, for example, on the way up here, they've removed various sites that were up containing fake images of myself superimposed on other people. That's the sort of thing that is going on social media. Social media has a responsibility to do the right thing here.
Mm.
I don't think so. I'm gonna draw the line there. And then, you know, he comically talks about the media has the responsibility for outing misinformation. Are you kidding me? I don't know about Australia. Right. The media is primarily responsible for misinformation in this country. So that's what makes me a little nervous, just because of where they come from.
Oh, I agree with that completely. I agree with you completely. That whole thing where now you're getting into other countries censoring complete topics, even though it may not have to do with him in other areas. But you're right. During COVID, they were very putting out a lot of content that was on social media that got picked up here and carried out throughout all media. So, that's definitely it's going to be a wild debate. And then what's crazy is you throw artificial intelligence into it. I mean, you notice he mentioned he said a picture that wasn't me. So I'm wondering if it was his likeness and it was artificial intelligence that created an image of him and he's claiming it's not him, because that's going to be a whole different kind of debate that's rapidly gaining momentum.
And George, how do you police that?
Oh, that is going to be I gave a speech to about 200 attorneys and I told them I hate to say this out loud, but the world's going to need more of you. Because we're going to end up in cases where our pictures aren't real, put out on the internet, and it's happening right now. The poor high school girls in New Jersey, they broke up with their boyfriends and they were put into bad places at a party that never existed, and they had to move schools. So it's getting to a point where to a certain extent, the content you're going to have to look at is artificial intelligence creating that content. As far as making up media stories, I think Elon's right. You're going to need free speech. Like, we need free speech on the internet because that's the only way you're going to figure out what's fake and what isn't when it comes to stories.
Yeah, so then we have the TikTok story, and that's still kind of, you know, he signed it today, right? So what happens?
He did. So as of now, as of today, the clock starts ticking. They have 9 months to sell their company to an American company or any type of European company, or the president has the ability to extend it to 12 months. Now, this is what's interesting. This whole TikTok ban was rolled into the help for Israel and Ukraine money.
Oh, my gosh.
The vote was 79-18 in the Senate, and all of them were voting to fund Ukraine and Israel, and they squeezed TikTok in there. So I thought that was a little wrong, but I thought that was a little off. But so they have 9 months to disband from a Chinese organization, or it will be taken off the Google Play and Apple stores. There will be no more TikTok in the United States.
So while I'm not a fan of TikTok and I don't use TikTok, I love libs of TikTok because they're on Twitter. I get annoyed by some of the content, but I understand how popular it is. There is a part of me here, and I don't like the Chinese influence and the brainwashing, and we know that that's going on. But there's a part of me here when our federal government gets involved in something like this that I just do not like.
I know. It's a bittersweet thing for me. Look, I mean, the content that they're forcing in China is completely different. It is educational. It is positive. It is affirmations. It is good things that you always see in China. Over here, the algorithm is completely different. The content you see persuades you. They collect all your data. And the Chinese government does have access to all of it. Congress did the investigation. It is 100% true. But yes, you're right. The other side of the coin is I hate when government starts messing around in corporate, in any type of business situation, because now you're influencing capitalism. You're messing with the free marketplace. So it's a definite, it's a conundrum for sure. I mean, on one hand, you're trying to protect the country and protect the citizens and the youth of this country from being persuaded and being fed propaganda and being tracked for the rest of their lives by the Communist Party. And on the flip side, you're like, this is just, it's so not good taste in your mouth to force a business to be sold.
Well, okay, here's a question for you. Who's going to buy TikTok?
Well, that's the thing. And who designates that price? Is it the Chinese party?
Ooh, that's a good
because
point.
Who says it? What is it? Is it 50 billion? Is it 100 billion? And if they don't sell, they have to look at, okay, well, what's the ad revenue we would lose? The other side of it I feel bad for is the people that are making money on TikTok as their livelihoods right now. So, yes, there are other platforms, but they're going to have to get all new followers over at Facebook, over at YouTube Shorts, over at X when they start doing short videos. So it's going to be
an interesting transition
for those people. That's not easy. So they're going to have a trouble time. But you're right. It's going to be somebody like an Apple Facebook or an X that comes in and tries to buy them if the price is right. And who knows if the Communist Party is going to be friendly with that or not.
So I don't want to drag you into the politics here, but the politics of this are rather interesting as well, because Trump has reversed his opinion on TikTok. He had been in favor of a ban, but he opposes it now. And what's interesting is the law apparently gives the sitting president a lot of authority here to judge a buyer. And it gives ByteDance 270 days to find a suitor. And that's a period that a president can extend by 90 days. There are 194 days until the next election, some 270 days until the next president is sworn into office. So you might, and The Atlantic covers this afternoon, you probably say that Biden's qualified buyer might be a little different than the one that would be selected by Donald Trump. So some of that might be interesting to watch moving forward as well.
Agreed. And does Trump use that as a bargaining chip for getting other things done without tariffs or without you know, there's other things that he wants China to do. He may say, look, you cut us a deal on this, I'll cut you a deal on this over here. So that's something that, yes, that could absolutely be a major influence if Trump gets in there before this whole thing expires and they have to make a decision to sell or not sell.
Go ahead, George. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I just think it's going to be fascinating to watch how this unfolds, because this is unprecedented. I mean, you have the government forcing a corporation that's obviously owned by the Communist Party of China. I get that. But you're having them force a sale or cancel or be gone. So it's a fascinating time we live in, for sure. I mean, there's just no way you could make this stuff up 20 years ago and people would believe it.
George, I've got a question, and this may be really dumb, but I mean, if they're forcing TikTok to sell, does that mean in the U.S.? I mean, how are you going to force a Chinese company to sell something that they do well with overseas as well as here? I don't understand.
Because they're
that.
Saying you can't operate here if you don't do it.
But yeah. Are they just going to spin off the American version and keep what they've
yes.
got?
Yes,
so you can do that? Okay, so they would just spin off the American version and somebody here. Okay.
That's correct. And the reason they want that is because they want an American corporation who's under regulations, the American regulations, to have control of that data so that it's not being put in the hands of the Communist Party. And I mean, they can listen to everything on your microphone. They can turn your cameras on without a little light showing. They know everywhere you're going on your GPS. They
wow.
know everyone in your contacts. They can listen and read all of your text messages. They can get into everything that's on your phone. That application has the right to do so, even if it's not turned on. So even if you don't open the app on your phone, it has full rights to your entire device. So that is the issue. And the issue is the data that's being collected is going straight back to tracking us. And it isn't about, hey, they're going to start targeting individual citizens. This is about feeding propaganda and information to change us over the next decades. That's how you change a society from within, and that's their goal, is to not
fire
dangerous. A missile, but yet change
right.
the society.
That is dangerous, and I'm concerned about it. Again, I stand by my comments about being very leery of the federal government. I would also say this, that I love the people like on Facebook in particular. They always complain about some of these things. Look, you sign, nobody reads those agreements that we're all,
right,
you know,
right.
you have no idea what you're agreeing to, and
no.
all these apps have a lot more access to your information
yes,
than you'll ever know, and you agreed to it because you didn't read the fine print, because nobody reads the fine print, because we can't, because it's so long. By the way, the fine print goes on for pages and pages these
Jeez.
Days when you have to click on that. George, great stuff as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much,
all
you
right.
guys. Have a good day.
Take care. Audio cut of the day coming up.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Well, you know, earlier this hour, I brought up this piece that was in the New York Times this morning from a physician at Mass Brigham talking about how none of us trust experts in medicine anymore. And how could you, after what I'm about to tell you? This is, so every time I think I'm shocked, I become shocked more. And now you have Jeffrey Flier, who's the former dean of Harvard's medical school, going after UCLA, because listen to what UCLA is doing at their medical school. They have a mandatory, you want to be a doctor, right? If you want to be a doctor and try to help people. You want to be a surgeon, go on to a specialty, right? I'm a big believer in specialists because I had eye surgery 30 years ago. UCLA's medical school's mandatory health equity class teaches students that weight loss is a, quote, hopeless endeavor, unquote, and that obesity is a slur used to exact violence on fat people.
Oh, my gosh.
All first-year students at UCLA are assigned an essay by Marcalisi Mercedes, a self-described fat liberationist.
Uh-huh.
This seems like this it's just parody
it
and satire, right?
Yes.
Who describes how weight came to be pathologized and medicalized, they're using fancy, racialized terms, and offers guidance on resisting entrenched fat oppression. This is per the syllabus. Mercedes claims that obesity is a slur. In fact, in the syllabus, she won't even spell it out. She spells it O-B and then an asterisk, S-I-T-Y. It's a slur used to exact violence on fat people, particularly, of course, black, disabled, trans, poor fat people.
What?
And offers a fat ode to care that students are instructed to analyze, taking note of which sections most resonate with you. This is another prestigious university where parents are writing checks for $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. The assignment shocked Jeffrey Flyer so much. Again, he's at Harvard, that he wants this to be looked into. He says it promotes extensive and dangerous misinformation. His quote was, UCLA has centered this required course on a socialist Marxist ideology that is totally inappropriate. He reviewed the full syllabus and several of the readings. As a longstanding medical educator, I found this course truly shocking. Now, one of the required reading lists is anti-capitalist politics as a principle of disability justice and the attacks, the evils of the ableist heteropatriarchal capitalism. Boy, you got it. That's a mouthful just for the syllabus, right? Others attack growth-centered economic theories, and they call for moving beyond capitalism for our health. You have American universities, which are given millions and millions, hundreds and hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in our taxpayer aid to fund syllabuses for professors and institutions that literally hate America. That's what we're doing in this country.
It's mind-boggling.
And it is on full display at Columbia University, New York University. Here's something encouraging, though, and we'll see the images tonight and tomorrow. At Texas, University of Texas in Austin, they were having none of it. They were arresting some of these idiots and rounding them up. So Aaron Siberian, who's been a guest on the show, he kind of outed this today. He says, look, snapshots of the curriculum have been leaking for months and have left the school doing damage control, but the full syllabus is now up at the Free Beacon. The course, littered with the lingo of progressive activism, intersectionality is a core value of the class, that's CRT, according to slides from the first session, and states outright that it is training doctors to become activists. The values
yep.
are radical humility, imagination, community, liberatory solidarity. I can't even describe some of this stuff. That's at a medical school. They're forcing, and I've played the audio. You have med students at the University of Minnesota, probably at Mizzou, that are, before they graduate, they have to surrender and bend the knee and recite this woke nonsense that they're going to be not doctors. They're not going to be the best at their craft. They're going to be the best at being woke. That's essentially what they're doing. This is just stunning to me. It really is. Jeffrey Flyer's been a guest on this show as well. I can't even believe that this is where we're at. It'd be one thing if this was some offshoot, weird, you know, lefty university, right?
Yeah.
But it's at all of them. It's not just at UCLA. It's at all of them. This is what they do. Not to mention you have elementary schools that are doing classes on pronouns right now. So we're lost in this country. I don't know that we can recover. I'm so glad I'm at the end of my life, not at the beginning, Sue. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of accelerating the pace there just a little bit. But let's do this.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, this one's very simple, and it focuses on something just comical from legacy media. This is Willie Geist from NBC. He's on MSNBC. He's talking to David Pecker. David Pecker is the guy from the National Enquirer that's testifying in the Trump trial in New York. But you just got to hear what Willie Geist says here, and I think most of you will get it.
How damaging is this? It's, you know, we knew all of this, a lot of it over the years. It's a reminder, though, of how ugly it is and a look behind the curtain kind of of the process and how the Trump campaign, according to David Pecker, worked directly with him and the National Enquirer to get these stories planted that could be damaging to his opponents in 2016.
Really? Really, Willie? Are you kidding me? He's saying that, the National Enquirer had people that were planting stories. It's what MSNBC, the New York Times, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Washington Post, the LA Times, Vanity Fair, LA, or Rolling Stone, they all do it. They're all planted stories. By the way, that's the entire narrative from COVID. The planted stories that the people in the media just sucked up and acted like they were the truth and they didn't do their jobs. Nice job, Willie, exposing all that.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.